Archdiocese of New Zealand
of the Ecumenical Patriarchate presents
In the Narthex
with Father Paul Petitsis.
Join him as he shares with us the ancient apostolic faith of the Christian Greek Orthodox Church.
And now your host, Father Paul.
Welcome to In the Narthex, a radio program of the Sacred Archdiocese of New Zealand. I'm your host, Father Pavlos, of the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, located in lovely Western Springs. If I'm not the first, let me be one of the first to greet you and wish you Happy New Year 2018. It's hard to believe that we're in the year 2018, especially for us, those of us who grew up with the 2001 Space Odyssey, and we thought 2001 was going to be the end of everything that we knew it as we knew it. But the world keeps going on, and it does change, but there's many, many things that stay the same. And, of course, thank God for that. Human beings are the same, essentially, through all these many years. Today's program, we're going to continue our travelogue through Greece. And with your indulgence, we're going to visit Ioannina. Ioannina is a beautiful city, very, very well loved and much traveled. It's now on a major bus route, but we're going to take a chance to go through it and see not only the touristic things that might be there, but more importantly, the spiritual things that we'll encounter there. Just been listening to Manos Achalinotopoulos and his beautiful CD Flight on Light, and this particular piece is called Dragon Lake. And it's important, significant rather, that we say Dragon Lake, because we're going to take you to Ioannina, which is a place that has a beautiful lake in it, and this lake is called Ioannina. And also there is another lake as well, which is called Pamvotis, which is near Ioannina, or on the edge of Ioannina. A beautiful city in the Epiros section of Greece, which is northern Greece, not too far from present-day Albania. And as you can imagine, those borders didn't always exist in the ancient times. And Albania and northern Greece and modern Greece were all one at one time. And the city of Ioannina has its beginning in Hellenistic times, but then again as a restored city built by the Byzantine Emperor Justinian in around the year 6th century AD, which of course means that it was built or established a city right around the time of the building of the famous Church of Hagia Sophia in Constantinople. It's traded hands many times, both through the Crusades and the Ottoman period. And it was ruled for quite a long time by a Muslim Pasha. And so it has a certain, well, I guess we'd say very Balkan flavor to it. But it's also well-beloved as a city of mainland Greece. It isn't close to any oceans and so forth. It's not kind of a place that most people go when they think of Greece for touristic reasons, but it is a beautiful place to hike and to walk around, and with the lakes, so it is quite beautiful and has a wonderful natural environment. And so I do want to encourage you to visit it as well. But I want to talk to you today about, as we said in our travelogue, this is a type of pilgrimage, and to talk to you about some of the people who have sanctified the city with their blood. And two of them are new martyrs who died under the Ottoman period. And the first is St. John. I'm reading to you from the book Evlogite, A Pilgrim's Guide to Greece. And this book is written by Mother Nectaria Maclise. St. John was born in 1522 into a poor Christian family in the village of Terovo between Ioannina and Arta. After the death of his parents, he set out for Constantinople, which had fallen to the Turks 50 years before. Along the way, he stopped for some time in Trikala, where local Turks questioned his Christianity. Although the reasons behind this incident are unrecorded, it appears that he was suspected of having previously converted to Islam. Under Muslim Turkish law, reconverting to Christianity after accepting Islam was a capital offense. John left Trikala and settled in Constantinople, finding work there as a tailor. His passion for Christianity led him to beg his confessor to allow him to seek martyrdom, but the priest refused. Now, if I can interrupt the story here a little bit, you have to imagine that Constantinople had just fallen, and people felt somehow that they needed to stand up, I suppose, for their church and for their people. And of course, the priest wisely refused him his desire to be a martyr. Later, however, when Turkish Muslims from Trikala arrived in Constantinople and resurrected the controversy about his faith, the youth felt that this was God's answer to his desire. He denied adamantly that he had ever converted to Islam. And on Pascha of 1546, Pascha, remember, is Orthodox Easter, he climbed up into a minaret and sang the Paschal Troparion, "Christ is risen," his voice echoing over the streets. He was arrested, imprisoned, and condemned. The same day, Turkish soldiers lit a huge bonfire and threw him into the midst of it. Fearful that the fire would spread, the owners of a house that stood nearby demanded that it be put out. The soldiers pulled the martyr's half-burned body out of the fire and lit another further off. Badly burned but still alive, John ran and threw himself into the second fire. Greek witnesses, aghast at his suffering, bribed the soldiers to end his suffering quickly by cutting off his head with a sword. Later, Christians gathered the ashes and the remains of his wonder-working relics and buried him in Constantinople. His skull is now in the monastery of Arlam on Miteora. There's also a small portion of his relics at Panagia Eleusa Monastery and an icon of him at Philanthropos Monastery, both on the island in Ioannina Lake. The new martyr John, his feast day is celebrated April 18th. Listening to In the Narthex, and we are doing these past few weeks a travel log visiting Greece, and we've chosen this time of the year to do that because, after all, it's summer and some of us like to take trips, and wouldn't it be nice to go and visit beautiful Greece? And we've taken you to many places so far in our travel log, but here we're taking you to a place that maybe isn't quite a tourist destination on most people's list, but a beautiful place nonetheless, Ioannina. And much beloved place, by the way. And it has quite an interesting history as well. And we've already told you the story of one of the saints who came from Ioannina, a man by the name of John, the martyr John. But now I want to tell you another interesting story from Ioannina. As we said earlier in our program, there was a period when Ioannina was under Ottoman rule. And one of the most famous rulers of Ioannina was Ali Pasha. He was called the Lion of Yanina, and he was a notorious and colorful ruler during the Ottoman reign. His history is strangely intertwined with that of the Christians under his rule, and with his marriage to a Greek Orthodox wife, Kyria Vasiliki. She was one of the most interesting women of the Turkish Empire. Many foreign visitors, including the poet Byron, wrote about his opulent and decadent court. And Ali Pasha was so well known throughout Europe that Alexander Dumas freely used his story as a background for the Count of Monte Cristo. After his appointment as ruler of Epiros in the opening years of the 19th century, the young ruler proceeded to carve out a virtually independent state for himself, which by 1820 stretched from what is now southern Albania down to Arta, of course in present-day Greece. His sons Veli and Mukhtar, by his first wife Emine, later dominated most of the Peloponnesus. Neither the Greek nationalist movement nor the Sultan could ignore his power, and he courted both when it was to his advantage. One of the most intriguing parts of his story, however, occurs much earlier in 1775, as an ambitious young regional governor, harassed by Kurt Pasha, then ruler of Epiros, Ali Pasha met St. Cosmas of Etolos, the famous missionary preacher who was reviving Orthodoxy among the faltering Greeks. You have heard about St. Cosmas on this radio program in years past. Paraskevi Rothios, an old woman from Epiros, told the author the long-held version of the encounter. So this is an oral tradition that was handed on to the author, Mother Nektaria Maclise. When the saint was preaching in Albania near Epiros, he was threatened by local Turks. Hearing of the threats, the mother of Ali Pasha took St. Cosmas under her protection as a man of God, and was so impressed with him and his teaching that she sent word to her son, "Come to me, I have a prophet here." Ali Pasha came and demanded of the monk, "Will I rule Epiros? Will I have Ioannina?" The saint told him that he would. Then Ali Pasha asked, "Will I go to Constantinople?" In other words, riding in as a conqueror. St. Cosmas answered, "Yes, you'll go to Constantinople with a red beard." 12 years after the prophecy, and 8 years after St. Cosmas' martyrdom by Kurt Pasha, who was unfortunately not as open and well-disposed toward Orthodoxy as was Ali Pasha, Ali was named Pasha and Vizier of Ioannina and proceeded to subdue Epiros and southern Albania to his rule. When he ceremoniously entered Berat as the new governor, he ordered Bishop Joasef of Belgrade to uncover the relics of St. Cosmas and build a monastery in his honor. Isn't that beautiful? Thus the saint's relics were translated and his skull enshrined in a silver reliquary through the gratitude of an Albanian governor who became one of the most influential rulers of the Ottoman Empire. You've been listening to this beautiful Flight on Light by Manos Achalinotopoulos that we've had on the show, especially as part of our travel log. Today's selection, this most recent selection, is called Iris Flight. And it features, of course, Achalinotopoulos, Garden, and John Psathas, our own beloved composer and artist, musician from here in Wellington. And it was arranged, this music was arranged by Steve Garden and John Psathas. Why it's chosen today, especially, is it's appropriate because it has that very Ottoman sound, if you will. Certainly Greek, but also reminiscent of the Ottoman Empire. It has a kind of a fusion, if you will, of those two styles. We are going to continue now just to read a little bit more of this story because I think you'll find it interesting. Ali's marriage to the Christian Kyria Vasiliki was another twist in the intricate and complex relationship between him and his Christian subjects. In 1804, Ali had received orders from Constantinople to crush a gang of counterfeiters in the village of Prishivitsa. He surrounded the village, caught the counterfeiters red-handed among their molds and melting pots, in order that the village be pillaged and the inhabitants massacred as accomplices. When the bloodshed began, a beautiful 12-year-old girl named Vasiliki came and threw herself at Ali's feet, begging his protection for her mother and brothers. He was so taken with her that he ordered them to be spared and carried her off to Yanina. He placed her in his harem, and she soon became a great favorite. Ali not only allowed the girl to remain a Christian, but furnished and maintained a small chapel for her in the palace where a Greek priest came to officiate. In the words of the French writer Gabriel Remerand, who saw her years later, Vasiliki grew into a large and beautiful woman with white complexion, black eyes and eyebrows, and a superb head of hair. By 1816, she had succeeded in retaining the Pasha's affections longer than any other woman except Emini, Ali's Muslim first wife, and the mother of his sons, Veli and Mukhtar. Emini, who had died in 1803, was known for her benevolence to both Muslims and Christian population, and her death came after a heated argument with Ali over a dream that she had had, that he should grant independence to the Suliate Christian tribesmen in his southern territories. Mistakenly thinking that her angry husband had ordered her death, she expired before the morning of a terror-induced stroke. Ali lived to regret his action for the next decade. Ali eventually decided to marry Vasiliki, which he did, with great ceremony. According to one account, the streets were choked with people and beasts of burden carrying presents. Even the women of the poorest villages brought a little honey or firewood. They were taken into the palace, and then they sang for him, while their husbands waited for them outside. On the wedding day itself, two men announced that they had taken on their own heads all the misfortune of fate might have in store for the vizier, and threw themselves from a high tower to the courtyard below. Isn't that interesting? They tried to die for him so that his reign would be prosperous. Very strange. To our ears, of course. Both were severely injured, and Ali accorded them a small pension and a daily ration of bread. Although Ali Pasha's marriage to Vasiliki was childless, by all indications it was not unhappy. During the tortured rages of Ali's later years, Vasiliki was the only one who could calm him. Anyway, the story continues about Ali Pasha and his beautiful wife, Vasiliki. And we do know that eventually he did enter into Constantinople, as St. Cosmas Hittalosa predicted, but with the red beard. And what he didn't know at the time was that meant that he had been beheaded, he'd been assassinated. And so it's just one more of those interesting stories of Greek history, a time when the Muslim occupiers and the Greek subjects in many ways worked together, and, of course, to the glory of God. This coming Saturday is the Feast of Theophany. Theophany in the Orthodox Church is the time when we commemorate the baptism of our Lord. Unlike the Western Church, we don't also commemorate the visit of the Magi or any other aspect of Christ's life. The only aspect of Christ's life we celebrate in the Greek Orthodox tradition at that feast of Theophany is the baptism of our Lord in the River Jordan. So we will be having services at our church in lovely Western Springs on that day, with Orthros beginning at 8:30 and Divine Liturgy at 9:30. If you happen to be able, please join us, especially for the Blessing of the Water service, which will take place at approximately 11 a.m. There we will take water and immerse the precious cross of Christ in a reminiscent way of Christ's baptism in the River Jordan. And then all those gathered, as well as the whole church, will be sanctified with the sprinkling of this holy water. And not only within the church, but we will at some point proceed outside of the church to sprinkle the crowns as well, because we see the Feast of Theophany as a universal celebration. We're going to close out our program today now with some additional songs, but now returning to our beloved Mr. George Pappas, who was a chanter at the St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church in Tarpon Springs, Florida, and at the Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church in Cleveland, Ohio, where I was privileged to meet him. What a blessed human being. So in this way, we're going to close you out with some songs from the Feast of Theophany and look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Thank you so much.